This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. Dairy farmers in the Ohio Valley are feeling pressure from a market that is flooded with milk. Prices have plummeted amid supply from foreign producers and larger operations squeezing out small farmers. As Nicole Irwin reports, the crisis has dairy farmers rethinking the U.S. market system and looking to other countries for solutions.
59-year-old LaRue County, Kentucky dairy farmer Gary Rock sits in his milking parlor, overlooking what's left of his 95-cow operation.
300 years of history is something that a lot of people in our country cannot even talk about.
That's how long Rock says the farm has been in his family. While the land has turned out tobacco, soybeans, and a number of other crops over the years, since 1980, dairy has nourished the family in and out of tragedy.
In 2013, we had an F2 tornado that totally destroyed all the facilities here except the one we are sitting in, which is the milk parlor itself.
Rock says the community helped his family restore the farm. Weeks after it was rebuilt, another tragedy hit. Rock lost his legs in a tractor accident. Still, the dairy provided, this time more than an income.
It enabled me to find life again in a profession that I already knew.
Now the farm looks to weather its greatest storm yet, a disastrous drop in revenue.
To give you an illustration, this same farm on the same number of cows is selling $170,000 less of product.
This isn't a Rock family problem. This is a dairy problem. In February, more than 100 producers across Kentucky and Ohio and five other states learned that Dean Foods, a major buyer, would cancel contracts. Another processor, Prairie Farms Fluid Milk, will close its processing plant in West Kentucky in June.
It looks to be that this will be the last month and a half of milking than I do.
The average price of milk is around 30% below the cost of production. Things are so bad that dairy producers that do have contracts report that co-ops are attaching suicide prevention information with their checks.
Hello, Farm Aid. This is Joe. How can I help you?
Farm Aid Communication Director Jennifer Fahey says the tough times remind her of the 1980 farm crisis, when as many as 2,100 farms a week would close. With more than a 50% drop in net farm income across the board, Vahe says dairy is getting hit the hardest.
Sometimes the best case scenario is helping a farmer to navigate declaring bankruptcy and getting out before it's even worse.
The U.S. open market system is pushing milk production to larger farms. In 1987, half of all dairy cows were on farms with 80 or fewer cows, similar in size to Gary Rock's operation. By 2012, that midpoint herd size was 900 cows. And international trade issues are magnifying problems for the few small farms left. International Dairy Foods Association President Michael Dykes blames Canada for violating international trade laws.
Now you have the Canadians coming in. They are selling skim milk powders, putting it on the ground in Mexico, 3 cents a pound cheaper than we can from the U.S. to Mexico.
Dykes hopes much of this will be corrected by renegotiating NAFTA or through U.S. reentry into the Trans-Pacific Partnership. That agreement allowed a small percentage of U.S. imports into Canada before President Trump decided to end it. But where Dykes sees Canada's system as a source of the problem, others see it as a possible solution.
I myself have, ever since I've been farming, supported some kind of supply management system like Canada has.
That's organic Wisconsin dairy farmer Jim Goodman. He's also president of the National Family Farm Coalition. He says a supply management system has worked for Canada for more than 50 years, and it will work in the U.S. In April, the NFFC, along with more than 50 family farmer, labor, and consumer organizations, sent a letter to Congress and the USDA urging immediate action on the dairy crisis by adopting a system like Canada's.
The government doesn't run it. They don't have to be worried about providing subsidies for producers when prices get low because of oversupply, because that doesn't happen.
University of Wisconsin Director of Dairy Policy Analysis Mark Stevenson says there are farmers who would disagree with him. He says evidence shows the U.S. is producing more milk than ever at reasonable prices to consumers both domestic and abroad. But it's farms that are much larger than Rock's that favor the current system.
We've had a lot of discussion about how big should farms be. What I think we see is that better is better. And if you are a better cow manager and a better people manager and a better financial manager, then you have better financial outcomes.
At one time, Stevenson says the U.S. had 6 million dairy farms. Today, there are less than 40,000. National Family Farm Coalition advocates say that Congress has a duty to protect family farms like Gary Rock's back in LaRue County. Rock says he likes Canada's limited quota-based system, but he doesn't know if the rest of America would feel the same.
We also want individuals to realize what is this picture that not only small dairymen are facing, but it's what we once knew as rural America, rural townships have faced, and that is trying to survive in an industry that is continually telling you, you have to become larger to survive.
For the Ohio Valley Resource, I'm Nicole Irwin.
The Ohio Valley Resource is made possible by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and West Virginia Public Broadcasting. A Kentucky program to train shelter dogs so they have a chance to be adopted has reached a milestone. Rhonda Miller of member station WKYU reports inmates at Muhlenberg County Prison have trained 1,000 canines in a project called Death Row Dogs.
In a bright, sunny room at Green River Correctional Complex, 12 dogs are sitting beside their trainers. It's the 11th week of a 12-week program called Death Row Dogs. Alan Harold says the lab mix named Snooky is the sixth dog he's trained.
When they come in, like when she come in, she was scared of everything and everybody. And she wouldn't sit here when she first come in like she is now. I mean, she's still skittish, but she's doing great. So I think it's a good program for the dogs.
Harold says the program is also good for him.
It's teaching me responsibility again, teaching me how to be a decent person, how to interact with people and interact with the dogs. And just from where I was, I wasn't a good person when I was out there. So it's just trying to rehabilitate me into being a good person to go back in society.
The dogs are also preparing to go back into society. Regina Bowers is one of the managers of the Death Row Dogs program at this state prison in Muhlenberg County, Kentucky. She says the name is not as tragic as it sounds.
No, actually, it's a great thing when they come here because a lot of our dogs come from kill shelters, and they are not in kill shelters when they leave here, so they are actually getting a good second chance.
This prison does not house death row inmates, but some are serving life sentences. Bauer says the Death Row Dogs program has been going on for 14 years.
We have one trainer that has been through the first, and I think he's at 48 or 49 dogs. We have our 1,000th dog in this class.
Bowers manages the Death Row Dogs program with Jim Yates, a corrections unit administrator. Yates says many of the trainers are serving fairly long sentences.
That gives them something to occupy their time a little bit more. We do have a lot of our trainers that are here for life sentences.
He says inmates have to apply to become a trainer.
Not everyone is cut out to train dogs. You have to have a certain temperament.
What do you think that is? I mean, what do you sort of look for as far as characteristics?
I look for somebody who's on the calm side, somebody who's not very agitated easily. They can control their own behavior so that they can control the dog's behaviors.
Death Row Dogs is a collaboration among the Muhlenberg County and Logan County Humane Societies and a group that provides foster care for dogs in private homes called Saving Paws Animal Rescue of Kentucky, or Sparky. Yates says the training has an excellent success record.
Most of our dogs, 90 to 95% of them are adopted.
Timothy Cruz served 21 years in the Army before he began serving time. He's been training a female lab mix named Rain.
Yeah, she's my fourth one, first pup.
Cruz says the dogs are with the trainers 24/7.
I have to take care of the dog, you know, saying it's a big responsibility, and I take that with the heart, you know.
Timothy Mackey is a trainer who says he gets a lot in return for the effort he puts into working with the dogs.
To me, really, it's kind of therapeutic. I'm missing my family or this or that. Kind of takes the focus off of that.
Mackey has been training a dog named Ace.
I've had dogs my whole life, off and on.
And how many dogs have you trained?
Around, I think this is 12 or 13.
That's a lot of dogs.
Yeah.
Do you have a favorite?
There's a couple that stood out that I've got more bonded to, but they've all been my favorite. I love them all.
When these canines graduate, some of the trainers will meet with the adoptive family to show them voice commands and hand signals the dogs have learned to obey. Then the trainers will prepare to meet a dozen new dogs that will soon arrive to spend 3 months at the Green River Correctional Complex. In Bowling Green, I'm Rhonda Miller.
Stay.
We've been hearing from 6th and 7th grade students from Appalachian, North Carolina on West Virginia Morning. These pieces were crafted during a summer program of the Partnership for Appalachian Girls, or PAGE. Youth in the program worked with facilitators to write, edit, and voice digital stories about their lives. This morning, we'll hear from Catlin Lewis.
I couldn't stop watching the way they stomped their feet with the purpose. It's loud, looks fun, and it has lots of movement. I was in ballet class at Miss Angel's dance studio. But when I saw them clogging next door, I knew immediately I wanted to try it. I started tapping my feet all the time, no matter where I was or what I was doing. Once I started, I couldn't stop thinking about it. I tapped my feet while doing homework, taking math tests, or watching TV with my brother Shane. Shane and I love to watch TV together, but he can't move like I can. You have to learn all the steps, but I love the challenge of remembering all my routines. When I first started, there was lots of steps to keep up with, and sometimes it was frustrating. When I stomped my feet, I pushed really hard into the ground to make it sound right. It's not random stomping, though. There's a purpose, and I'm making art. During recitals, I don't really focus on anything because I don't want to think too much. But other times, clogging helps me focus better on some things or take my mind off stressful things. I get nervous for reading tests because I'm better at math and science. But when I'm moving my feet, it gets my brain going and tests seem easier. I rock back and forth and tap my feet while reading now too. It helps me concentrate. And sometimes, when I'm worried about my brother having a seizure, I focus on keeping my feet moving. Once I clogged the whole time he was in surgery, because I thought he might not make it. Focusing on my feet gets my mind off him, and he loves to watch me dance. Last year we had a funny finale, and I knew he would have laughed. But the recital lights made him have a seizure. My brother can't dance like I can because he has rods in his back. But I push him around in his wheelchair and try to catch all the bumps because he loves movement like I do. And I dance for him because I want him to smile.
That was Catlin Lewis, who lives in Appalachian, North Carolina. She produced that story last year with the help from PAGE, Partnership for Appalachian Girls Education, a program affiliated with Duke University. Her story originally aired on WUNC. You can hear more from this series on our latest Inside Appalachia podcast. West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. You can keep up with the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from West Virginia University, Concord University, and Shepherd University. Our producer is Glennis Board. I'm Teresa Wills.